The following program is underwritten by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. Welcome to Humanities Connection, production of WFDU-FM and the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. I'm Bob Mann. In a few minutes, we'll take you to a special place in New Jersey called Weitzbog. But first, a discussion about a project at Ramapo College of New Jersey. Jane Addams was one of the most important social reformers in U.S. history. The New Jersey Council for the Humanities has awarded a grant to Ramapo College to further the use of the digital collection of the papers of Jane Addams. And here to discuss this project in our WFDU TNEC studio is Kathy Moran Hajo. Kathy is editor and director of the Jane Addams Papers Project at Ramapo, and she's also assistant professor of history at Ramapo College. Thank you very much for taking the time to actually come into the studio.
Thank you, Bob. It's great to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about Jane Addams. I'm making an assumption here that everybody knows who she is. We know her for Hull House, Settlement Houses in general, but give us just a quick overview of who Jane Addams was.
Well, Jane Addams was born in 1860 in Illinois, and she was a middle-class or upper-middle-class woman who was interested in helping out. So what she had done is opened a settlement house called Hull House, where she and friends of hers would help the neighbors basically acclimatizing to the United States. She also was involved in many social movements and progressive movements in the time. She was a suffrage activist. She fought for the abolishment of child labor. She tried to help immigrants who were having difficulties getting into the United States. And she also was a major supporter of the peace movement.
So here you have a very important woman, but feminism is really only one piece of the puzzle in terms of her battles and her efforts. She was mainly talking about immigrants and the poor.
Yeah, I mean, I think that her idea was that we needed to the society at the time was changing rapidly. We were moving from like an agrarian society to a more industrial one, and there was a lot of difficulty in doing that. The country was becoming more urban, and there were not the systems in place to help people who were falling through the cracks. And with the massive amount of new immigration coming in, there were a lot of people falling through the cracks.
I just want to mention something which came up in a conversation you and I had in a pre-interview preparation about what a settlement house actually is. Middle-class or upper-middle-class people, educated people, would live among immigrants, the poor, those who were struggling and living in terrible conditions, and actually would be there right on the front lines of helping them. How did that all work out?
Well, what they did is they tried to make a place out of the settlement house that was almost like a community center where people could come for different services. A lot of the settlements offered educational programs like teaching English or even teaching reading and writing to adults after work, and also teaching kindergartens. They ran art programs for children. They had nurseries and day nurseries for women to leave their children, and they even offered things like cafeterias where people could pick up lunch or have coffee without it being at a bar, which most of the social activity was done.
Well, obviously, her life and her work is still relevant and important today. So let's talk about these papers. Are these speeches, books, articles, private letters? What actually constitutes the Jane Addams papers?
Well, most of what we have, I think, are her more professional letters. We have some of her letters with members of her family and with other people, which we wish we had more of. I think that Jane Addams has an interesting kind of personal background that isn't necessarily captured in the paper so much. There's actually a story that another woman who worked with her saw her burning her love letters, basically.
So we're going to get to know what she really thought, but we're not going to necessarily know how she really felt in terms of her personal life and what she did.
Yeah,
but obviously you don't read this for any kind of gossipy reason, but sometimes papers do reveal a lot of things about the behind-the-scenes life. I guess this is not particularly the case here.
She was pretty private, and it's funny because I was at a conference recently and we were talking about, you know, what the privacy rights and things like that, and someone said, what would Jane Addams think if she knew what you were doing, I said she'd probably be appalled.
You know? You'd be sued by a great social reformer, although she's a public person. Let's talk a little bit, though, about this New Jersey Council for the Humanities grant. The idea of actually having a digital form of these papers and the concept of furthering the use of the digital collection. Obviously, we understand what it means to take hard copies mm-hmm. and to have them in a digital format, but what does it mean to further the use? How is that going to be accomplished? And I guess that's really the thrust of the grant. So what does it mean to further the use of the digital collection?
So we think that our main audience right now are scholars and probably upper-level college students. And we think that these papers have a broader appeal to students in middle school, high school, and to people that are just interested in the progressive era and what the ideas that people are thinking about. So it's slightly a marketing thing, but what we're trying to do for high school teachers and high school students is to build National History Day guides. And I don't know if you're not aware, National History Day is a competition for middle and high school students where they build fairly sophisticated projects using primary sources, also using interviews and things like that. So they have a theme every year. And what we did was try to build up guides so that students would be able to navigate our digital edition to find themes that would work for the current year. So I have a bunch of teacher education students at Ramapo who have been working on it. So it's been great because they've been able to learn while doing. We're also building documents-based lesson plans for teachers so that they can bring the documents to classrooms. And the other piece is that we're building a crowdsourcing function on the site, which, a little bit like crowdfunding, crowdsourcing is when we get the public engaged in the work that we're doing. So what we're looking for now are for people to volunteer to transcribe documents to help to get them on the site so that they're searchable.
We're talking about the Jane Addams Papers Project, and the New Jersey Council for the Humanities has given a grant to Ramapo College of New Jersey to further the use of the digital collection. And my guest in the studio at WFDU is Kathy Moran-Hodjo, and she is Assistant Professor of History at Ramapo and also the editor and director of the Jane Addams Papers Project. When you talk about historians and the work that they have to do, you mention primary sources. To keep history from being just anecdotal or word of mouth being passed on, and I understand oral histories are important. As a matter of fact, in the second part of the program, we're going to do a segment about oral histories. I'm not minimizing that, but the idea of a primary document. Explain to the audience why a historian, a scholar, really needs primary documents.
Well, I mean, everything is subjective, and when someone writes a letter or they even write a diary entry, they're writing their view of what happened. So the further from that event you get, the more interpretation and the more subjectivity is added in. So we want to get the primary documents are the ones that were created at the time, usually by the people involved or people who were very close to the event. So that is the closest we're going to get to have actually been there. So like a video, an oral history, even, it's primary because it's the same person, but it's usually looking back over time, so there's some loss of clarity. It doesn't always mean that the primary source is completely accurate, and you have to always criticize it.
But it is what that person thought at that time, and if that's a president or a social reformer or someone who's mm-hmm. significant in history, and I understand that the discipline is moving much more toward the mm-hmm. common person, but still, the so-called movers and shakers, the leaders, to even get an insight into what they thought. They could be totally wrong,
right.
But if you were looking for Lincoln's true motivation, in the Civil War, was it, to free the slaves or to keep the Union together? That kind of insight mm-hmm. can only come from that primary source.
And one thing that you said about the common people, one of the things I find really interesting in the Addams Papers are the letters that are written to her. So when she supports Theodore Roosevelt in the Progressive Party in 1912, she gets letters written by people saying, how can you support this man? He's an animal. He's a monster. And, it's like we're getting the public views that are just coming in unfiltered to her. Like a lot of them are critical because I think that people approve of something they don't generally tend to write.
So in 50 years, will we have a Twitter collection? Will we have a Facebook
right.
collection of what people thought
people
at the time? And it will be endless because
be
now everybody can just get on that mm-hmm. thread. Let's talk, though, a little bit about Jane Addams and her lasting legacy. I would assume that somebody who did so much for immigrants, so much for poor people, has a lasting legacy, especially since she wasn't out on the radical fringe. She had a tremendous influence mm-hmm. on presidents.
Yeah, I mean, Addams was, when she died in 35, I think the Times said she was the most well-known and well-loved woman in the world. And honestly, her legacy has not, she's not as well known now as she was.
And Eleanor Roosevelt was around at that time.
Right, yeah. And I think that did she isn't as well known as she should be now. And I think that her ideas about being a kind of rational, friendly, you know, welcoming person is something that is lost a little bit today. But what she believed in very strongly is that if you got a bunch of people together in a room, even if they disagreed, if they could work together, they could figure out things. She had this very positive and optimistic view of people's ability to make change, and that understanding and listening to all the different voices was the best way to do it. She's, you know, her legacy, I think, probably the most realistic thing is that the social work movement came out of the settlement movement. And I think
so. Were there no such things as social workers who were working for the city or the town in those days? Was she part of a movement that made that more standardized in American society?
Yeah, the settlement movement helped to professionalize social work so that there became degrees in social work as opposed to it being a charity. The previous version would be, it might be a religious charity or another kind of charity that would come in and give charity to people. And the difference there is that you feel like the people that are just receiving things from you. But in the settlement movement with social work, it's more of a helping and giving and taking. And it's not so much of a, like, we're the smart people and you're not. And here's
which
we
can
give
be
you
patronizing and condescending. Yeah, we're going to teach you how to be, which is not what this is. And as a matter of fact, it probably was even part of the model for the Peace Corps in the 1960s, this idea of, you know, teaching a person a fish rather than just handing him a fish, that type of thing. When you look back at Hull House and all of these different things, these all happened in Chicago, right? This didn't happen here in the New York metropolitan area.
It did, yeah.
Oh, it did?
Oh, yes.
Oh, the movement got here.
The settlement movement was around the country. It was definitely, it began in England, but it came here quickly. The Henry Street Settlement, I believe, is still in existence in Manhattan. That was founded by Lillian Wald, who was a close friend of Adams. But they were in most major cities, and there were some in there's always a little less in the South and the West, but they were in most of the Northeast and Middle.
Right, and they seem almost more appropriate to an urban environment,
to
a crowded urban environment that's very busy. Let's just give something very practical to the audience before we end this segment, which is coming up in just a couple of minutes. And that is, if the grant from the New Jersey Council for the Humanities to Ramaphoa College does indeed further the use of this digital collection, how can people take advantage of it? Where do they actually go to be able to access these documents?
Well, you'll go to the web and you'll type digital.janeadams. That's all one word.
Two D's in Adams.
Two D's in Adams.
That's
got to
throw some people.
That's right. .ramapo.edu.
Okay, give that just one more time before we go off, and then we'll just make sure that we have something that people can actually take and take advantage of because of the fact that this is a fascinating life, which definitely, you would say, she has relevance today, right? She's not just a history lesson.
No.
What would you say is the thing that we should most carry from her message and what she did?
I think that the progressive ideology of trying to understand a problem, research it, and then solve it is something that we really could use today to work together to solve problems and to understand things better. I think that her way of working with people is something that is definitely a model for going forward.
Let's just talk again about the actual practical access to these digital papers. Can this be a little bit of a shortcut, possibly a link through the Ramapo College site or anything like
honestly,
that?
Honestly, if you type Jane Addams papers, you'll find it.
You're just going to find
you
it.
You will.
And why this particular person for you? That's what I'd like to wind this up with. Whenever I speak to a historian, no matter how much broad knowledge they have, they seem to focus on a particular person. Why Jane Addams for you, Kathy?
I think that I might break your mold. I am very much interested in women's history and in social history, but I was not. I was actually approached to take over the Jane Addams papers because I've had experience working on documentary editing with the Margaret Sanger papers. The federal funder that had funded this project for years from the previous editor called me and asked me if I was interested because our project was ending, and I've always found her interesting, but I didn't have that kind of like I must do Jane Addams feeling.
Right. More your background and your skill set.
Right.
But listen, you've really applied it very, very well to this, and I'm glad that more people will be able to have access to this. I thank you very much for coming in to take the time to come into the studio and talk about this.
Thank you.
Kathy Moran-Hajo, who is Assistant Professor of History at Ramapo College and Editor and Director of the Jane Addams Papers Project.